good morning, honorable members and the board, if you are called the board of Commission on Employment Equity. Welcomed, and the department. My name is Eric Nyagemba, the chairperson of the Borehole Committee by the name of Alec Chabeleng has been delayed. He's on the way. So I'm just doing what he was supposed to do for the time being until he joined us, of which he will. Before introductions, the purpose of this meeting is for the Borehole Committee to be briefed by the Department of Labor and Commission on Employment Equity on the Employment Equity Report 2010-2011. I've already introduced myself. I think we'll start with the left, my left-hand side, but the members first.
Thank you. My name is Ian Hollis. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Labour from the DA. Thank you.
And they told me that I am Shelley Makubela, my Shelley, a member of this committee. That's my mom. She told me that my name is Shelley, and I go by about that name.
My name is Adrian Williams. I'm with the ANC on this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Anton Alberts, and I'm a member of the Freedom Front Plus. Thank you.
The right-hand side on the table.
Hi, good morning all. My name is Mpong Gedi, and I'm a chairperson of the Employment Equity Commission. And before my colleagues also introduce themselves, I'd like to give an apology for two of my other colleagues, Commissioner John Botha, who couldn't make it today, as well as Commissioner Malisela Maleka.
Good morning. My name is Commissioner Nomonde Masajwa, and I'm representing the state.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Noah Singh, Department of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Nom Vulahati. I'm the member of the commission. I'm representing Labor.
Good morning. I'm Toki Mama Sheila from the Department of Labor, Director Employment Equity.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tola Mnene. I'm from the Department of Labor, Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
I'm Caroline Kutzer from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. My name is Chetra Mashalaba from Communication at the Department of Labor.
Thank you very much. We have been joined by another member of the control committee who must introduce himself.
I am Patu Kanare, I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you. I'm Ellen Lyne, I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you very much. Just few apologies on our part. Honorable Master Muller he is with the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, which their flight delay, because they had to connect from Limpopo in Johannesburg. The other apology is from Honorable Manamela, who will not be part of this meeting due to unforeseen circumstances. We have got only one announcement, which is the invitation of the Portfolio Committee by the Committee on Mineral Resources on Friday from 9 to 1. It will be the continuation of the update on the liquidation of Aurora. So the committee is invited. I think what needs to happen, therefore, is through the committee secretary, members will be expected to confirm their attendance in order for the Portfolio Committee to liaise with Mineral Resources to indicate as to how many and who are those members who will be joining them on Friday. Your hand was up, Honorable Ollis.
And just also to record the long-standing apology of Mr. Boinamo, Honorable Boinamo, he's had a back operation, so his apology extends for several weeks until he's recovered and can join the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we then hear from the Commission for Employment Equity?
Thank you very much for this opportunity. We are appreciative for your invite for us to come share with you our annual report. This is our 11th annual report. Before we begin with our presentation, I thought it might just be wise for us to hear a little bit about the commission and how it was set and what the regulatory requirements around this commission is. The commission was established, really it's a Section 9 established through the Employment Equity Act. And it requires for us to have a chairperson, which I am, and 8 members from NEDLAC representing labor, representing business, representing the state as well as the community constituency. And my colleagues here today represent the different bodies. The mandate of this commission is to advise the minister on the codes of good practice, regulations, policy, as well as any other issues around how to really bring about transformation in the workplace, and also provide the minister an annual report in terms of the state of employment equity in the workplace. What is covered in this report, we thought we should maybe just begin by giving you the context of what the annual report really is about. And the context is thereof, remember, in terms of employment equity, we are required to make sure that from an employment equity point of view that the workplace is equitable, is representative in terms of race and gender and disability. And we do this basically by promoting equal opportunity and elimination of unfair discrimination in the workplace, as well as the implementation of affirmative action measures. All these really are meant to address any disadvantages in the employment in the workplace, and basically with the aim to reach equitable representation in the workplace. What we have for you is the employment equity value chain here, which kind of indicates in a very dramatic and simple form what it is that the Act is trying to achieve. Beginning at the bottom there, we're saying with equity in the workplace around recruitment, around skill development and promotion, and those really become the basic inputs in terms of employment equity. And if these happen in an environment that is where elimination of discrimination has taken place, and also accompanied by affirmative action measures, we should get to a state where we have the diverse workflow force that we'd like to have in line with the employment equity, that is with regards to race, gender, and disability. And of course, our desired state is really for the workplace to be in line with the EAP. but what is this EAP? EAP stands for Economically Active Population, and this is information that must be taken into account by employers when they develop their employment equity plans in terms of transformation. And economically active population is really based on information that is published by Stats South Africa, which includes people between the ages of 15 and 64 who are either employed or unemployed and seeking employment. What we then show you next is the distribution of EAP as it stands currently, and we publish this on an annual basis in our report. The national EAP really takes into account national information. I'll go through that line with you slowly. What we would like the workplace to look like for African males, 40% of the workplace must be 40.5%. Colored males must be 6%. Indian males, 1.9%. White males, 6.7%. African females, 33.1%. Colored females, 5%. Indian females, 1.3%. And white females, 5.4%. So that is what the desired state is in the workplace, and this applies to all levels. We stress this because sometimes there's a bit of misunderstanding in terms of where these numbers apply. They do apply to all levels. Now, if you were to add those up and summarize that, white representation in the workplace then would be a desired number of 12.1. And black all combined, by that I mean Indian colored and African combined, 88%. Okay. Now when you go further below, now that's where you get provincial EAP, because we are quite aware that different provinces have different makeups in terms of races and gender. And therefore when you get into different regions, you'll start seeing regions that have a different profile depending on the level of representation. And I'll just touch on the Western Cape purely because we are in the Western Cape today. And if I was to combine purely just the colored numbers, male and female, unlike the 11% at national, Western Cape, we're talking about 55% colored in terms of colored representation there. And the same would go, as I said, different provinces. You'd get slightly different profiles which represent the EAP in those very specific provinces. We do produce an annual report, but this annual report changes year on year, basically based on the number of companies or the types of companies that report. Small companies, which is employers that employ less than 150 employees, report every 2 years, and therefore our annual reports include small employers every 2 years. Large designated employers, these are employers with more than 150 employees, they report annually, and therefore they are always included in our annual report. And this year, what do we have in our annual report? We have both large and small employers having reported. Now, how many reports did we analyze to put this report together? And what we did there, we picked up even years, because even years are the years where you have both large and small employers reporting. So in 2006, we had about 6.8 reports received. And in 2008, we had 10,000 reports received. And in 2010, we had 18,000 reports received. This is an area this is really positive news on our side because of the increase in terms of number of reports received over time. And this was due through the effort of the department having roadshows nationally to encourage employers to submit. But the bigger really change around this is how we have changed and automated our submission, where companies used to submit hard copies of their reports. Now they submit online, which makes it a lot easier for them and has increased the level of submission. But I think if you look at the right column next to it, there's even good news there. The quality of the report has also increased. Looking at 2006, we could only really analyze 63% of the reports received. And if you look at 2010, when automation had really taken up, we could analyze almost 90% of the reports received. So this is nice that proof that automating of our reports has increased not only the numbers but the quality of the reports that we get. Now, you do have the report, annual report available here, which you will get upon completion of the presentation. But in this presentation, we don't analyze for you all levels, but we analyze only the first four levels because basically senior management, that's where decisions are made in the companies, and that's where really captains of industry sit, and these are people that determine what happens in our economy. And therefore, we only focus on those levels. Now, if we begin at top management level, and there we give you trends from 2006 to 2010 in terms of what has happened at that level. And we've broken this down for you in terms of race, although you can find the details where it's broken by race and gender in the report. For Africans, from 2006 to 2010, Africans have increased by 1.4% over the 4 years. Now, this is against their EAP of 73. If you go for coloured, and this is national reports, they have decreased from 4.7 to 4.6 over 4 years against an EAP of 11%. The Indian population, which includes both male and female, has increased by 0.6 against an EAP of 3.2. And the white population in the workplace has gone down by 1.8% over those 4 years, sitting now at 73% against an EAP of 12%. And foreign nationals seem to have remained the same. Now, what this slide tells us, basically, is that, and this is what the report would say, is that if you look at black people against EAP, which is really what we're aiming at, then we are a little discouraged looking at the four-year trend that we've only managed to go Africans by 1%. And 12% is really miles away from 73%, which is the desired state. Colored also a little bit disappointing. They have gone down there, and 4% is really still quite low from the 11% EAP. But we are particularly happy in terms of what has happened for the Indian population because their EAP there has grown and continues to do so. And you will see now that they are almost double their EAP. So when you hear the Commission saying that employment equity works and it has benefited greatly Indian people and white women, this is what we mean. We relate this to the growth in the workplace, we relate that through to EAP. And when we talk about white dominance in the workplace, particularly at top management level, it's when we look at the 73% representation of white males and females combined at top management level compared to a 12% that they should be. Okay? If we move on, what we try and show you here is a gender profile of the top management level again. And once again, we take a trend, a look at the trend from 2006 to 2010. You will see that if you look at the red, at the fourth column in red, the difference for males, you will see that indeed men have grown, okay, in terms of the representation in the workplace. But if you compare that to females, you will see that the growth for females is slower than the growth of that of men. Let me just represent what I mean here. African males have grown by 0.8% at that level, but African females have grown at 0.6%. So that's what we mean when we say that the number of females or the growth of females at top management level is slower than that of males. And this is what, when you hear saying that employment equity seems to be a replacement of white males by men, this is we are talking basically on these numbers where we find that the change, although it's happening at a slow pace, it seems to be more favorable to men than to females. And if you look at the absolute numbers there as well, African men being 9.2% at that level, females are 3.5%. And if you go through all the numbers again, each level, including the white males, 60% white males compared to 12% females. So still a strong dominance of males at that level. Now, in the next slide, we show you what the profile of top management level is in 2010 at that level once again. And here what we do, we begin once again by showing you what EAP is, which is the desired state once again. And then we show you the workplace profile. What do employers say that top management looks like in 2010? Now, if you do a quick addition of those numbers, you will see that white people are 72% at that level versus the 12% EAP. I'm combining males and females here. Granted, but I think this the concerning news for us is recruitment also seems to be quite biased for white people towards white people as well, because almost 59% of all new recruits at that level is white. We go to promotions, 65% of promotions into that level is white. We look at terminations, majority of terminations in that at that level is white at 65%. Skills development, majority towards white people at 61%. Now, what does this table tell us? What it tells us is all these inputs, which is recruitment, promotion, and skills development, are still very biased to white people, more, of course, to white males. And therefore, as inputs into this level, it indicates that change at this level is going to be slower than we anticipated to be. The terminations there indicate the levels of opportunity available for companies to appoint black people, to appoint females. 65% of terminations there are white, but if you compare that against recruitment, we are equally recruiting quite a lot of white people, and therefore not fully using the opportunities available within employers to employ black people. And therefore, when we hear that there is this low turnover at top management level, we agree it is lower than at junior middle management level. But we don't accept the fact that there is no movement, because there is movement. Okay. And also what we do hear from employers is that black people at those levels job hop, and therefore it doesn't really help for them to employ them, because they leave as soon as they employ them. The numbers they give us are quite different. The highest terminations at those levels are indeed white people. And then we took a look at the sectors to see which ones were the best performing sectors and the worst performing sectors. We struggled a little bit with this report because we were almost comparing the worst, the best of the not so great bunch. So please take best tongue in cheek. Community, social and personal services were best in that group. Electricity, followed by mining and quarrying. Now, a lot of these were influenced, particularly around the community, was influenced by government. Now, the worst performing sectors at this level was retail, wholesale, as well as manufacturing. Now, I'll move over through to senior management, and there, once again, we give you a trend by race. African have grown from 13% to 17%. That's a 4% growth over 4 years, almost 1% a year. Colored has grown by 2%, almost just 1.2, over 4 years. That's less than 0.5% growth a year. Indians have grown by 1.4% over the same period. The growth there is also just about 0.5% or so a year. And your white males and females combined have reduced from 70 to 64% by about 7% over the same period. That's an average reduction of about just below 2% a year. And we see our foreign nationals seem to have been growing at that level. And as you look at these numbers, please take into account EAP. Once again, as we did for top management, we look at females at senior management. And there again, the trend seems to be the same. The growth in males seems to be higher than the growth in females, and therefore confirms once again that there is more males at senior management level than there is females. And we look at the inputs once again in terms of recruitment, promotions, as well as skill development at senior management level. And there the trend is still similar to what we saw at top management level, where more than 50% of recruitment, promotions, and skills development are towards white people, who are sitting at 63% at that level. Termination there also around 64%. And then we take a look again in terms of the best performing sectors and the worst performing sectors. Not much change from what we saw earlier. Fairly similar trend. Community electricity is the same, but a new entry there, catering, is the worst addition to that. and the worst performing sectors, manufacturing, retail and wholesale. Fairly similar to what we saw with top management. And then we move over through to professionally qualified or your middle management levels, and there we look at a trend again. And here we start seeing some positive trends, and this is the slide that begins to make us smile a little bit. Africans have grown by 10% over 4 years. Colored have grown by 2%. And if you look at their 2010 profile at 10%, that's only just 1% shy of the 11% EAP there, so not doing too badly. Indian people, 8%, still more than twice their EAP. White people, 47%, still quite a large gap between the desired 12%. And then you go through to the next slide and see what females are doing at that level. There, a slightly positive story is beginning to emerge. If you look at the red columns again, you will see that women are growing at a higher pace than males at that level. Except, of course, for white females. So everything seems to be going positive for females there, except when you get to white females. We cannot explain that. Although they are very positive compared to all other women at top and senior management. But at that level, they seem to be growing less. Although if you look at the absolute numbers, they're still higher than all levels. And then you look at EAP, sorry, workplace profile recruitment, promotion, termination, and skill development at that level. And here we continue to see the positive trend. And the positive trend here tells us that even the inputs such as recruitment, promotions, and skill development are biased already to black. And therefore, we are seemingly employing a lot more black people. We are promoting a lot more black people. And we are developing a lot more people, black people. That is positive because that indicates that that level is on its way to changing and improving its profile. So this is good news. But if you look at, once again, the worst and the best performing sectors, some continuing trends there. Community electricity and catering still featuring in the best. Wholesale and the newcomer there, finance and manufacturing. And now we look at the last level in this report, which is skilled technical. And this is where you see even more positive trend, where Africans have grown by 11%, almost 12% over the 4 years, colored by 0.4%. You will see now here they have already beat their 11% EAP. And Indian, 6%. Now that seems to have gone down from that 8% at professional level to 6%. So there's seemingly a little bit less Indians at the end of the pyramid here. White people, 28% compared to their 12%. So those numbers have actually come down over the 4 years by 11%. We look at gender at that level as well, very positive indeed. Women have grown in their numbers compared to males. But when you look at the profile and you look at recruitment, promotions, terminations, and skills development, you see an even better trend compared to the professionals, where you do see a strong bias for recruiting black people, strong bias for promoting as well as developing black people and females. And the worst and the best performing sectors, not much change there. What we have added for you is a slide that looks at women at different management levels. Now, if you look at the top management level, now this is the summary of what you've heard. Men are 81%, white women 12%, and black females 6.3%. You move to senior management level, you visibly see a reduction of males and an increase of females. The beneficiaries there mainly being white females. To at the professional level, once again a decrease of males overall, and there you start seeing an improvement in terms of African, Indian, and colored women combined, 21%, which is higher than the 17% of white women. Then at skilled level, very positive indeed. Both positive for females, but also positive for black females.
So this picture tells us that there is still a challenge, basically, in terms of race, particularly gender, when you look at the gender. So there is a challenge in terms of gender at different levels, but race seemingly still plays a role at top and senior management level, although it starts changing a little bit at professional and skills level. Having gone through all the levels, now we talk about people with disabilities. And this is where we really see little or no change. And really, if I was to look at stats as far back as 10 years ago, movement has been extremely slow. The past 4 years there, we saw a 0.1% increase of people with disabilities. Now, if I was to summarize this report for you, and while I summarize, take into look into the future a little bit and see, with this pace of change, where will we be as a country around employment equity? You will see that if we continue to increase black people at 1.9% at top management level, that it will take us a good 127 years for black people to reach their EAP at top management level. And we go to senior management there as well. We've had an increase of about 6.8% of black employees at that level since 2006. And if the pace of growth continues at this rate, it will take us 32 years for us to reach our EAP at that level. And we look at the professional level there, it will take us 12 years to get there. Although I was a little bit positive when I presented both at professional level, but you will still agree that 12 years is still a long way to go. And when you looked at the skills level as well, I was fairly positive as I presented those slides. And it will take us 5 years for us to reach the desired EAP. And in summary, although we are happy with certain changes that are happening in terms of transformation at the workplace, particularly at the lower levels, although we still have a long way to go, we are concerned about the pace of transformation at top and senior management level. This is despite the fact that there is terminations of white people at that level, and therefore enough opportunities available for us to transform those levels. Women still remain underrepresented, particularly at higher management levels, and I talked here particularly about black females. Disability representation remains particularly low, below 1%. And the question that we really ask ourselves and ask ourselves as a country is, can we really wait more than 30 years to start seeing change at our top management level? We do summarize the report with certain recommendations, which is, what can we do to increase the pace of transformation and what have we done to date? We have stepped up a liaison with the Department of Trade and Industry to influence certain changes around the course of the BEE Act, whereby we are getting closer alignment and making sure that whatever we are trying to push on the employment equity side is also done the same on the DTI side. We began the journey of amending the Employment Equity Act about a year or so ago, introducing fines as well as simplified enforcement. These are currently negotiated as we speak under NEDLAC, and the bill went out for comments to the public. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Commission on Employment Equity. Members, you have heard the presentation, and now is the time for you to engage, whether through questions, points of clarity, or comments, you can combine those. Members. I'll start with my Lieutenant, Honorable Hanare, followed by Honorable Ollis, Honorable Albert, Williams.
Thanks, Chairperson. After going through this, it's very clear that we have got a problem at top management and senior management, more than any other area. But if you remove government, because government might have been driving this employment equity more than anything, which picture emerges if you remove government from this? Because from the look of things, in terms of recruitment and promotion, it's very clear that a lot is taking place at the private sector level. Is this constituted by unwillingness from their side or reluctance from their side to abide by the act, or is there any other problem? There might be underlying problems. There might be some underlying problems why the private sector is not doing this. And is there any breakdown of the origin of foreign nationals? I mean, where do they come from? Who get absorbed? And if you look at professionally qualified in terms of the areas, if we can concentrate on in that particular area, what impact will that have on the in terms of the levels of trying to push these people towards top management and senior management?
Thanks, Chairperson. I almost wanted to answer the question about where the foreign nationals come from, but I decided I wouldn't.
Since you have got the
insight. Well, you know, I just watch TV regularly. Chairperson, thank you. My questions are just two. The first one is, and I agree with my colleague that obviously the difficulty in changing the South African workplace is being experienced at the top two levels. I mean, you can see it very clearly in the stats. My questions are, firstly, how many people, what percentage of the South African workforce is working in those top two levels? One presumes that the number is a smaller number than, say, at the skilled level. So if you could give us an indication of how many people are affected, how many people work at the top management level and so on. And then my second question is, does the chairperson of the Employment Equity Commission have suggestions for us in terms of what problems are being experienced at those senior levels resulting in this slow pace of change? Maybe you have got some ideas for us as a committee as to what you think the problems are causing the slow change at the top level while there's more rapid change happening at lower levels. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. This report, as far as I'm concerned, is incomplete because it doesn't touch upon the whole labour force. There are also skilled, technical, junior management level, semi-skilled level, unskilled level. And I've asked the Minister of Labour in the State Department where there are underrepresentations from minority groups. And her answer to my parliamentary question indicated that there are underrepresentations from the side of whites and Indians in a semi-skilled level, and unskilled level also whites and Indians are underrepresented. If employment equity is about equity and all South African citizens are equal in the eyes of the law and the constitution, then surely one must also attend to those inequalities. Your own report indicates that there is a decrease among minorities when it comes to their skilling. So it means increasingly minorities, especially white minorities, will have to be employed on the lower levels. Yet there seems to be no indication from government that they are taking that matter seriously to also employ white people in the lower levels, no lower ranks. Because there is an overrepresentation of blacks in those ranks. And those are the numbers given to me by the Minister of Labour herself. So I would like to know why is this not addressed here? And why, if we are serious about solving the job creation problem in South Africa, are we only focusing on the top levels? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to comment on, it seems that top management and senior management are transforming the other professionally qualified and skilled people, because they're actually making that happen within their companies. They're prepared to transform their lower levels, but not themselves. So in other words, then they are, questions have been asked about the reasons that you think that they're doing this, but I think that we should look deeper, that they're basically transforming everybody else except for themselves, and we need to deal with that. I'd also like to know, has the Commission actually engaged directly with the underperforming sectors to find out the reasons? What type of engagement has there been with those sectors? And the last question I've got is, what has the Commission done to establish why people with disabilities are not being employed, why this figure from 1% is not changing at all? I mean, you know, we keep talking about employing people with disabilities. We keep coming up with plans, but yet the figure just never moves. And I just want to know, what are you doing about this? Thank you.
Now it's through your chairperson of the Commission. I know the questions might not necessarily be attended to by yourself. If need be, then you will allocate some of the questions to your colleagues. But the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I will attempt to answer some of the questions, and my colleague, please feel free to join. The first question, which is, if we were to remove government, what would the picture look like of the profile? Indeed, government has done better than the private sector, and therefore when we look at the combined report, it looks like there is overall improvement. But when we separate the two, we find that government is transforming quicker than the private sector. Now, the reasons why there is, or the reasons given by the slow pace of transformation, our colleagues here who run DG Reviews will give us some examples, and I'll give them a motion to do so now. But the reasons are around the fact that there is no black skills available in the country at those levels, and there isn't black people with the necessary experience. When we look at the results of the tertiary, or the output of tertiary institutions for the last 10 years, the numbers of black graduates have more than tripled. And therefore, there is seemingly a healthy pipeline there of black skills being put into the pool. But also, we do say that white people were not really born with experience, they were given experience. And therefore, for us to say that black people don't have experience, it's because we don't give them the experience. So it's about the willingness for companies to actually take what they perceive as a risk when they employ black people, and they perceive as less a risk to appoint white people with equally no experience. I will hand over to my colleague Nzwakhi, who just gave an example of some of the issues they find when they do DG reviews around why black people are not employed at senior management levels.
Thank you very much, Chair. First, before I elaborate on the issues of DG reviews, I just want to indicate to the honourable members that the report, if you look at the back of the report, the Appendix A, we actually separate government from private sector to give you the picture across all occupational levels of the workforce that were analysed. And you see there, when you separate government from private sector, that government is doing better than the private sector. If you look at the Appendix A from pages 24 to 25, so that when we talk, you are able to also just compare what we are relating to. On the issues of companies, why there is some slow progress in terms of employment of black people and women at top senior management levels. During that assessment process, we realized that as we engage with the chief executive officers of companies, there is no clear indication of commitment from the top. The decision makers themselves don't take transformation seriously, because in most of the companies that we have reviewed, we realize that they don't have employment equity plans. They don't plan the same way that they plan for their own businesses. Because in most cases, they have business plans, they set targets in terms of profit and so forth. However, when coming to transformation, there's no regard to set numerical goals and targets to transform their own organizations. And they are more likely to actually make sure that they have more black people at unskilled, semi-skilled levels, skilled technical levels, but coming to professionally qualified senior and top management where it matters most, where decisions are being taken, they believe that that terrain belongs to certain groups and not to everyone so that they can complement each other. Those were the kind of things that we observed. And in most cases, we found that where they had employment equity plans, these were just wishful statements without any targets or goals attached to it. So they wouldn't be able to measure themselves. The plans that we saw had no objectives that are measurable, that we intend transforming this top management or senior management with 5% or 4%. So they were setting wishful statements in plans that cannot be measured. And in some cases, we also realized that companies were more likely to submit employment equity reports by the first working day of October without basing it on any equity plan, meaning that the reports were, some of them were thumbsucked by consultants that were not even in the workplace, consultants doing reports outside the workplaces. And I must say, in those sectors that we have visited, mining, some big retailers and the big banks and in South Africa, we are able to assist them to do proper workplace analysis and audits to look at the over and under representation of certain groups across all various levels. And we believe that if they implement the equity plans that the Director General has approved, we may see some changes going forward in the next 2 years or 3 years. There is another question that was raised, Chair, if you allow me to talk to it, regarding the issue of the report not covering all the levels. Say, if you look at Appendix A, we cover all the levels. It's just that in this presentation, the Commission is focusing on the four top levels because that's where black people are and women are underrepresented. But at semi-skilled and unskilled, we believe that we are actually above the 88% black there. Therefore, we are saying those people shouldn't get stuck at the lower levels. We want them to influence decisions in companies where it matters most, at professionally qualified senior management and top management. That's the focus of the presentation, not that we are actually excluding people at lower levels. And the Honourable Member Albert also raised an issue. Chair, if you allow me to cover what he also raised, was that there's no indication from government what happens to unskilled and semi-skilled when coming to the Indians and white people who are underrepresented at those levels. Say, in our discussions with companies, during our Director General reviews, and when we interrogate their EE plans, we raise this concern because, remember, the objective of this Act is to create equitable representation of all the groups so that we are able to create a diverse workforce. So when they do their proper audit of their workplaces to check the over and under representation, we always highlight that you cannot start focusing at the four top levels. You need to make sure that also at unskilled and semi-skilled levels, we get to see more white males and white females and Indians coming in through there. So that has been our objective in this Act, that we are not exclusive, but we are saying together we can complement each other. Therefore, those that are excluding certain groups at those levels, they are actually going against the objective of the Act. The issue of people with disabilities, Chair, I think Niresh will deal with that one. Thanks, Chair.
The issue of people with disabilities, I think whether you're in a bad economy or in a good economy, they always seem to be last in the pile. And with the credit crunch, it even makes it, or the financial crisis, it even makes it worse. But that shouldn't be an excuse, because we're looking at an issue of parity over here. What has happened in the meantime, and what the department and the commission has done? It's engaged with DPSA. DPSA is coming with formal, strong guidelines with regards to what is the minimum requirements for the public sector. Because in 2000, Cabinet took a decision that by 2005, people with disabilities in the public sector will be 2%. That was not reached. Then government took a decision that we must do it by 2010, and that was not reached. Then what happened now, it is gone to 2015. So we've just been, last week with DPSA, they're going to be take active involvement. Secondly, what was said was, what can we do with the constituencies? So at the moment, people with disabilities is on the table at NEDLAC, because one is looking at not only what business can do, it's like, for instance, unions. How can we get people actively involved? So there is some active participation with regard to that. Also, addressing the disability sector, one is saying to the disabled sector is that you can't sell just your disability. What do you have to bring into the table, and what systems do we have to put or processes in place so that you can sell your skill, and then you can turn around and say, look, I have the skill. It's just that I happen to be disabled. But we are doing very, very badly with disability, and the worst is if you're an African woman, African, you're a lady, and you're a person with a disability, and that is one of the markers of the most disadvantaged person in this country. Thank you very much.
I think what we are finding common in terms of the reasons that are given to the slow pace of transformation, whether it's at senior management level, whether it's people with disabilities, whether it's indeed about getting more white people at the lower levels, a lot of it seems to have a tinge of racism in them. When you talk into the workplace at lower levels, you'll have employees telling us that we also do want indeed white people here, but when we are employed, they're not employed at lower levels. When they do come, they're employed at supervisor level. And therefore, you find unions complaining about actually wanting black white people at the lower levels. So they actually fight for the other way around, because they're saying we never get supervisory positions. You'll get a white people person always getting supervisory levels at the lower level. Okay, and that is almost a fight been taken by unions. You talk about disability. We are a society that struggles with disability. We struggle with what doesn't seem to fit within what we call normal. And therefore, if a society we shun people with disabilities, we'll shun them in the workplace as well. So we are really a reflection of society that we are. And over and above that, people with disabilities, you'll find that the race element comes in, where you find that white people with disabilities are more likely to get jobs than black people with disabilities. And those with severe disabilities, they just seem to scare society, and therefore they scare the workplace, and therefore they just don't get paid. And the workplace perceives reasonable accommodation as very expensive for people with disabilities. Now I've got to get you a talking computer while I get the same computer for everybody else. Now I've got to get a computer that's big letters, different software from somebody else. Now I have to get an interpreter at a cost while I don't have to do that for other employees. So people with disabilities are seen as an expensive and unproductive resource in the workplace, coupled by our fear of disability and what seems not normal in the workplace. And therefore, we are really just a reflection of our society. We really are. If I respond to you about top and senior management level, now I don't have the exact numbers here, but my colleague maybe might help. But if you look at a pyramid, there is obviously less people employed at top and senior management level. And we are quite aware of that. And because the numbers are so much smaller, we do expect the pace to take a little bit longer to transform. Remember that that was entirely white 10, 15 years ago. And therefore, and you will have heard some of the reports where we are saying, yes, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there was no white MD. But now we can show a few. So there has been movement, but it's about the pace thereof. And when we look at turnover, there is turnover there. So it's not like all of them don't move. It's lower than lower management levels, no doubt. They move less.
but they do move. So we then say, if there's opportunities, why are they still being filled by white people? That's how we look at the pipeline and the feeder into those levels and be more concerned with the feeder. How many do you employ? How many do you train to change that level? So it's the feeder that concerns us. And when we looked at the BUSA report, that looked at the boards as well as CEOs and CFOs of listed entities. A large number of them were close to retirement, some of them being retired. But if you look at who replaces them, further still is white people. And then we talk about the willingness thereof to change. And when indeed we are thrown with the issue of experience, then we say, but give people experience. But I think what tends to be forgotten is that before 1994, black people did go to universities. And therefore, we can't talk about employment equity as it began in 1994, that there was no black person with no experience or with no qualifications then. And if you go into the corporates and look at the most aggrieved professionals, these are black people that were qualified 20, 30 years ago, who have been working and really hit glass ceilings for a long time. But now when we look at employment equity, we seem to begin to think that life began with Model C kids, our kids when they went to school. So you find people like myself in their 40s. I got graduated, I got 26 years ago. There's many like me that have been in the workplace and have been graduated many, many years ago. So we tend to put in a 10-year head and look as if that black school only really began with our kids when they went. So we are quite happy, as I find, to build pipeline from primary schools, or we can see black talent coming. But we've had black schools, we've had black universities for years and years and years. And therefore, that's when you start looking at the willingness for change. And indeed, we can change if we really put our mind to it.
Thank you. I think members will indicate if there are certain questions that were not responded to. But if your questions were attended to, you still have a follow-up question or other questions as a result of the responses, you are free to do so. Can I see hands? Honorable Hanar and Honorable Ollis. Are you the usual suspect?
No, I'm a new suspect.
Yeah.
when it comes to the issue of disabled people, I mean, if I run a business, I would also want to make profit, and therefore I will not employ people who are going to suck my profit. From the government's point of view, what can we as legislators do to incentivize employers to look at these people as a benefit rather than a cost? I think maybe we should look at that. And I'm also interested in this thing of saying the employment equity plans, which are not having targets. I mean, when companies get audited, they look at a lot of other things to be audited. Can this not be looked at as something which needs to be audited? I don't know. Maybe there are other procedures which will have to be followed to be able to say, if you don't do this, you will get a qualified audit or something like that, or disclaimer, whatever. In terms of that, I'm thinking aloud. There might be practical things which are going to be done, but there will have to be consequences. I mean, to me, if you're going to thumbsuck a report, it's tantamount to fraud, honestly, because you are not reporting the truth. And you are consciously trying to crook the people of South Africa by trying to blindfold them into this thing. Things like that must have consequences. We can't just allow certain people to succeed with those things.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think some great minds think alike. I was going to suggest the same thing. In fact, perhaps the Chairperson of the Commission can give an opinion on whether she thinks that we should encourage government to provide
I don't know, a tax break or a subsidy for equipment for disabled people so that the playing field is leveled again. So companies have that excuse removed, you know. If we provide a ramp up the front of the building, will government somehow give us a tax cut on the cost of that ramp? Or if we have to buy a special computer that costs 5,000 more, perhaps government should provide a tax cut to the value of that improvement or some such thing. I don't know. There are different financial vehicles one can employ to reward companies for taking on disabled workers, or maybe even not reward, maybe just make the playing field level by absorbing some of the cost of the equipment. Because sometimes there is equipment. I mean, if somebody is severely disabled, there will be equipment. But you're quite right in your assertion that we need to get used to working with disabled people. And that's something we as a society have to learn. When someone's got a funny hand, they're conscious of it, you're conscious of it. And I think you've got to get used to that. I think we have to teach South Africa to treat disabled people as equal. So I agree with your point completely. My other point, I think, is that I would like those stats, if nobody has them here, if we can, are they there? So they're in your report, but just not in the presentation. What page is that? 24, thank you. Because it is important. I mean, if it's 1% of the population, then it's a very small number. But thank you very much. Thank you, Chief.
At a very powerful 3%. That is why it has to be transformed. Very powerful 3%. I will let my colleagues just respond a little bit to the disability element, but there's more that we can do to even get a society maybe used to disability, is to probably start moving to mainstreaming people's disabilities into our schools as well, so that even our children get used to disability, because as long as we have separate schools for disabilities, then we don't even grow up with them, we don't go to school with them, and therefore we will not work with them. Okay? And therefore, if we get used to, as a school, as a society, providing people with disabilities without getting tax incentives and money back from government, it becomes the norm. All right? So I suppose in terms of maybe leveling the playing field, because where we are is where we are, I suppose tax incentives would be advantageous, but I'd let my colleagues talk to that.
Chairperson, I think tax incentives and so forth could be beneficial. But looking at it from a disability point of view is that if you're in the workplace and you've got all the other employees, if they need a piece of equipment or anything, you don't look at cost to benefit. You do it. Mm. Now the question is, why not for people with disabilities? Because a lot of the time they would need reasonable accommodation to perform a particular job in your business. And in performing the job in your business, that equipment or that device or whatever they need there, if they had to move on to another job, they may not need it there. So it may be job specific. So what we are saying is we're not opposing anything. One is saying it needs to be multifaceted. And we think that business needs to take responsibility for its employees. And if we're looking at mainstreaming, then people with disabilities, if employed by an employer, is part of their employees. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I think another issue that the Honourable Member touched on was the issue of why there's a lack of resistance to change. I think what we've also picked up is that if you look at issues pertaining, whether it's issues of disability or it's issues of transformation in general, they are not seen as core to a business. Hence, you find that you will never find that objective entrenched within the company CEO's performance agreement. Mm-hmm. It becomes a side issue that must be dealt with by HR or some little corner. So it doesn't form part of the company's key strategic objective, where the CEO can be monitored in terms of how far have you gone in terms of giving effect to government's broader objectives of transformation, giving effect to employment equity and all those type of things. So that's another issue that we've picked up, that as long as issues of transformation are treated as a side issue, then they will never find or get the desired expression and commitment from the leadership of companies.
focus. I think I've seen your hand, Honorable Albert. But I think the issue here, in terms of the presentation, the last part of your presentation, you are talking about enforcement. And I think a simplification of the enforcement process, which has to do with the current amendments to the Act. And I find it strange that an Act of Parliament, there's a certain sector of society that doesn't respect the legislation. Because if I look at this and listen to the presentation, and this reminds me immediately after the commission presented its report, there were reactions of different kinds, like the trade union called Solidarity, which said they are going to take you to task because what you are reporting on is not really what is happening. I'm interested to hear from you as to whether really have you been taken into task, that means to courts of this country, if yes, where the process is. I'm interested to hear that. I understand the one point that has been raised by my colleagues in relation to incentives. I remember even compensation fund once said to this committee, they are looking at having awards for those companies who are having lesser injury on duties. My question was, why do you have to award somebody for complying with the legislation? Because it's the legislation of the country. Really, it seems to me that there's an attitude in terms of the current legislations, which in particular are talking to transformation. I think the chairperson of the commission raised an important point to say, why do we also separate learning institutions for disability and people who are not disability? So there's that some kind of integration that we need to look at, all of us. I thought, let me just raise this point. And I think the other point is, I understand you are also looking at engaging with the Department of Trade and Industry. But I think at the same time, for me, you can't leave out the Department of Higher Education and Training. I think you need, simply because now the skills development have been taken away from the Department of Labor, which I think it was easy by then, because you are still within the same department. So now, for the skills development to be another department, I think you need to engage with them, because you'll find that, because I happened to be in a meeting where the minister, Comrade Bladen Zimande, was presenting to Public Service Administration to say that what they have also identified is that these private institutions, particularly for engineers and these associations, there's some kind of gatekeeping. That is why you will find a situation in your report, especially on top and senior management. When it comes to terminations, most whites, just because of certain opportunities within the public sector, and even replacement is going to be difficult because even those training institutions in the private sector, they are not allowing certain groups to be trained in those. So my point is informed, my point for me, that you need also to liaise with the Department of Education Training. It's just because of that, to be in the same understanding, and also you know that what you are put in place for at least is being complemented. But your hand was up, Honorable Abbas, and then Honorable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. just an additional question. Thank you, first of all, for answering my first question quite comprehensively. This is quite a vexing problem because we're grappling with various interests, competing interests. And the point from where I'm coming is that we must ensure that we create jobs in South Africa, that we can enhance our economic effectively, and that we can grow our economy so that more jobs are created, so we're not just shuffling existing jobs around at the end of the day. I think that's part of the solution, and I see that in the summary of your report, you want to, or you are liaising with the Department of Trade and Industry to make EE and SD compulsory for small companies in the codes. Now, we know that most jobs come from small companies, entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs won't put up their money and risk, expose themselves to risk if there are many compliances that they, or many regulations they have to comply with. And I want to know how we're going to get around putting this burden on small companies when they're already struggling in the economy as it is at the moment. Secondly, as you've indicated, there have always been qualified black people in South Africa, pre-94 as well. Do you have any numbers on those people, and do you have any strategy on how they can be actually be placed in the economy as well? And then also in terms of the post-94 people, is there any skilling strategy that you have to make sure that people do have the required skills when they finish studying? And then just a last question on the employment within the state itself. If we look at the lack of service delivery on local level, local government level, a lot of that has to do with capacity. And we know that there has been a situation since 94 where people with capacity has been forced out and have been replaced with people with very little or no capacity. And what I want to know is that more important than service delivery or the economy of the country, or can we find some way, and I'm trying to be constructive, I'm not trying to be difficult, can we find some way where people who do have the required skills can be actually be brought back in a mentorship type of process where they can upskill the people who are placed in key positions for service delivery? Thank you.
William. Well, I think not, Chair. Chairperson, I just, after listening to everybody, it seems that there's a lot of pussyfooting around here. Fundamentally, I'm personally quite disappointed with these results, these figures of transformation. I mean, we need to coax these employers and be all nice and gentle with them so that they actually try to transform their workplaces. And I think that we need to get tougher as this committee and also the department and the commission. We need to start putting in harsher penalties for failing to comply to this legislation. We can't now say we're going to give tax incentives, etc., etc. They must just comply to the law. You know, this is South Africa. I'd also like to just comment on the last input, saying that the people pre-1994 didn't have the capacity to run a democracy, and I don't think that we should confuse it just because they had some capacity, you know, with our current democracy. I think that we need to see much more improvement in these figures, and if private sector or if government can't improve these figures, we as this committee should start looking at legislation changes to enforce the change. Thank you.
Look, we must acknowledge that South Africa is not a normal country. Like you said about blacks who graduated before 94, the truth of the matter is that before 94, we had some funny countries calling themselves, and everybody was running around calling themselves presidents of some homelands. somewhere else. And they never kept any statistics. So even if you can want statistics before 94, you'll never get a single one, because their job was not to collect the statistics. They were not serious presidents, and they knew that. So they behaved properly. They behaved properly the way they were expected to behave. So the issue is, if black people black graduates have tripled, we have got to be able to say, why are these people not getting jobs? I know there is this excuse of saying it's because they study arts and things like that. But every time there is a debate on radio, people phone in and say, I've done BSc, I've done this, but I never get a job. There's really something wrong in a country where you get people having excuses. Look, as far as I think when the employment equity came into being, there are companies which budgeted to pay the fine. So we should not pretend as if everybody welcomed employment equity and therefore they have got genuine problems why they are not doing what they did. They budgeted for that. And I think to a certain extent, what we need to do is to say, we must identify the culprit. It's the job of this committee to do oversight. You can't behave as if there is a country of private sector and a country of public sector. That when we do oversight, we have got to get these companies who we know, firstly, who have used consultants to be able to thumbsuck numbers. Two, the continuous culprits. There must be companies which you have warned or you are advised to say the way you are performing is not right. You can't advise a person for 17 years. There must be a point where the portfolio committee goes to those particular companies and try to understand what's wrong with you. Are you not a South African? Because we have got to understand that. But the other issue is that we have got to also be realistic about the cost. That's why I'm not saying when you give incentive for doing something to ensure that the disabled people are accommodated, it's permanent. If you have put in a ramp, you can't claim the money for every year for the same ramp which you have put in. But for putting it in, you have got to be at least, I'm not saying you should be, but the truth of the matter is that capitalists don't think the way you think. They want profit first. And if you are going to tell them, if it is cheaper for them not to put in the ramp and pay the fine, they'll prefer to pay the fine. And will not achieve what we want to achieve in terms of getting disabled people employed. So we have got to balance all these things. There are some areas where you have got to be really tough, but there are areas where you have got to be able to encourage people to do what is right. And it's a matter of strategy. We can't apply principles as a strategy, because once you do that, then you are doomed.
I can see there are hands in your delegation, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's precisely why we're here. We are here as a commission because we believe that the committee, the portfolio committee, can be able to assist us in terms of enforcement. And as we understand, the capitalists are after a profit. That's why they disregard the act. Because if we try to enforce the act, we are told that in some corners we are frightening away investors. So as ourselves, committee and government, we need to enforce and make sure that we are on the same side to make sure that those companies implement the act of South Africa. You know, because every time that you try to enforce, you are being told that you are frightening away investors, so you have to tiptoe. That's capitalist. So we must look at it both ways. The manner in which you are looking at it, we're not talking about disabled people, that you want the same government to make sure that you level the field and at the end interest of the country, because you want to allow them to make more profit, as if when disabled people are within the workplace, they are not productive.
I don't think that's an insult. Because my understanding is that those people who are disabled, who are in the workplace, they are productive. Therefore, it is your responsibility, not the government, to make sure that you make sure that the working environment of those people are taken care of. That's our understanding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the issue that the Honourable Member raised around trying to align with the BEE scorecard and strengthen it to give effect to those three elements, I think we are cognizant of the fact that obviously we want to mitigate and not really burden small companies with all of the compliance issues. But having said that, because now within the BEE framework we have thresholds, we are not saying that the companies that have been exempted will be forced to start implementing those two elements. We are saying that the bigger pool, where you are looking at companies between 5 and 35 million, that there, that's where we need to see movement, because that's where the target is in terms of transformation. So that's how we're going to try to align and utilize the scorecard to strengthen employment equity and skills. And further in that, the chairperson also raised the issue around engaging with the Department of Higher Education. We are actually doing that, because one of the things we noted within the BEE framework is that when you talk about skills and how you incentivize companies to start skilling, it was always focused inwardly to say that you skill and train the people that are already there. So what you are saying is that now you need to start focusing outwardly in terms of training to ensure that the more you train outside, the more you create a pool of people who are capacitated to get into the work stream. And I think the incentives that government has put around issues of the job fund also seek to address private sector to say that if you take more graduates, then you have these incentives that will benefit you. So we're trying to use all these legislative instruments to try and really give effect, because without it, I think it's clear that with looking at the time where we've been and the number of years, it's not going to happen voluntarily. So we have to use the mechanism, and I think under the framework linking employment equity and BEE, because there's an economic benefit on the BEE side, that's how we want to entice and ensure that, because they depend on government for procurement and all other issues of licensing and state tenders, then we can use that and say, how do we make business transform?
If I can just talk a little bit about skill and just take us a few years into our history as South Africa. We were not a country just born of engineers, and therefore mines kind of cropped up because we had engineers. We first kind of realized we had the resources, and then we built engineers and built a huge industry of mining in the country. So, and it didn't stop us from mining. So we also have to be careful that we don't let skills hinder our growth, because we didn't let the lack of engineers hinder our growth in terms of mining. And we are now at a stage where we export very highly qualified mining engineers because of the experience they have in mining in this country. And therefore, with the same deliberate intensity, we could develop the skills of this country if we want to. And it's really a choice.
Member?
Hey, you were supposed to talk through me. Huh? If I'm acting, you don't have to undermine me because of that. I think I can see that members have exhausted their mandates on this topic, if you had mandates. But I think in thanking the Commission on Employment Equity to come and present to this portfolio committee, there's a need of us working together in terms of driving the transformation agenda, in particularly using the Employment Equity Act. And it means that we need to have also interactions with other departments, in particular your Department of Higher Education and Training, Department of Trade and Industry, including economic development. in looking at how can we together in the plans that these departments they do put in place, the issue of is the transformation agenda is high. It's in the top of the programs. The also the oversight responsibility that we have as a portfolio committee, it must not necessarily be limited as to how nice the labor centers are. There are computers and everything else. But we need to go deep in making sure that when reports of this nature arise, we sit down with the committee, analyze them, and then develop a program of how are we going to work together with the department and the commission in making the bad aspects of the report to be better. I think that the oversight point that Honorable Hanare raised, I think is important. I think we must be vocal, not only on areas where there are protest marches because there's less housing being delivered in certain areas, but I think we must be vocal also when such reports of this nature arise, that there is no service delivery in the workplace. Because service delivery can not only be limited to a number of streets that have tarred in an informal settlement or in a township. Even in the workplace, I think it's important for us to be vocal in those areas. Also, workplaces need to be places for skills development. Because you can't just say skills will be developed outside the workplace. Even in the workplace, that's where the matters of internships comes in, apprenticeship comes in. Those are happening within the workplace. So I was just reflecting on matters which I think members do reflect on, including the commission for employment. Are you a commission for employment equity, or you are a commission on employment equity, or you are employment equity commission? but one can see that is CEE. Okay. No, I was struggling in my mind. I wanted to check whether am I correct or not. Commission for employment equity. Okay. No, I was correct. I wanted to check whether was I saying something that is not. I think with those few words, thank you very much, members. There were a few, because I was looking at you when you were writing. You are not. So very few. Thank you very much, honorable members and Commission for Employment Equity for coming. Thanks. The meeting is adjourned.